Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tamming.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here as always with Anthony Slater, with Fred Katz. It's playoff time, gentlemen. It's second round. We are doing the luxurious playoff road life edition yet again. I'm here in Phoenix for the first time in quite some time. Western Conference semifinals. Suns get out to a 1-0 lead. In this series against Dallas, we're going to get into everything, though, guys. But let me bring you in. What's going on? How are we?
Terrific and beautiful Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Slater, you are a roadie in terms of being a full-time beat man on the Warriors. Where does Memphis fall in your... You know, we don't talk off court too much, but you know, the
don't
Grizzlies
get me in trouble here, Sam.
Grizzlies Nation, listen closely.
I mean, like once you're in Memphis, it's fun. Problem is getting to Memphis, particularly you know in a playoff series where they have home court advantage. There's a possibility of three Memphis trips in about like a week's time or so, and it's just really hard to get in and out. Because there's like 20 flights per day, basically, that go to this airport from like two different cities. So that part don't love. But let me tell you, best media seats are, you know, tied for the best media seats.
Are they good
in the league?
All right. Yeah. I haven't been there in a minute. I haven't. It's been years.
Courtside.
Nice.
I was 4 feet from the referees as they were deciding Draymond Green's flagrant two, and Draymond Green was like 6 feet from them. And I saw beforehand that they were, as they were discussing, they're like, yeah, I think, well, it's a one there. Like, I think we're going to go with a two. I think we should do a two. And I was, and I had like
it is Draymond,
7 seconds.
Let's go with a two.
I think I had 7 seconds of delay of knowing that they were going to give him a two, but Draymond not knowing yet and going, ooh, this should be interesting.
If
and
you
then
had
turned
no
to
ethics,
Draymond
you...
and went, we're going to go with a flagrant two. And then I was there. And then the eruption happens right there. But it was just a great seat for that anyways. But,
sorry, I cut you off. I was going to say, you should have, you know, if you had no ethics, you should have jumped on Twitter in that 7 second gap and said, sources, this will be a flagrant two.
I'll tell you what, that is not the first time that I've heard somebody recount firsthand on a podcast this week about Draymond's flagrant two. I have seen emergency podcasts do it even more firsthand than that.
Quite firsthand. He will do all the firsthand, and including we could probably bring him on the podcast. He'd break down all the series with us. But yeah,
too
no,
big time for us
and
now.
The environment, it is such a good playoff environment in FedEx Forum. So I really like my experience in Memphis again, but if we're ranking in the league, just because of the difficulty of getting there and the fact that it's considered, you know, Western Conference, this is a Western right. Conference series. I'm in Tennessee. Sorry.
All good. All right. Real quick, Fred, before I throw it your way, here's what we're getting into today, gentlemen. We got Miami, Philly, the Heat jump out in that series. Obviously the Joel Embiid orbital eye fracture injury is just so unfortunate, and hopefully we see him on the back end of the series, but we're going to talk about whether or not the Sixers can survive long enough for him to come back. We need to talk about one James Harden. I did not do this intentionally. I'm wearing a t-shirt today that is right on point. It says, Fear the Beard. It is not a James Harden t-shirt. It's a Brian Wilson San Francisco Giants
old school knockoff playoff t-shirt. But we're going to talk about Mr. Harden and his inability to carry the Sixers, at least early on in this series, and whether there could be some kind of ripple effect when it comes to the Sixers planning in the offseason. We know what's at stake when it comes to him being in town. We're going to talk about this Sun series that that I mentioned that I'm at and make our way all the way through. We got a lot to get into, boys. I'm going to let y'all take the rundown from there. But Fred, our resident Grizzlies beat writer, thoughts, you know, you're not in Memphis at the moment, but thoughts on Draymond and Flagrant 2s in this series and where is that series going?
You know, I kind of thought the Warriors had the upper hand coming into it. The Grizzlies are a little bit of a tough basketball matchup for them, you know, especially from a turnover perspective. The Warriors play, you know, that motion offense that also takes on a lot of risk. They turn the ball over and the Grizzlies steal the ball more than anybody, and they get running off of those live ball turnovers more than anybody. And, you know, they're like the ultimate fast break team. And I kind of thought that would be a great way for them to pull away if they were going to do it. But like watching game one and seeing Draymond miss the first half, the second half, and the last minute of the first half, seeing Klay Thompson have a poor shooting performance all the way down to, I mean, he hit the game-winning three when ended up the game-winning three, but missed a couple free throws at the end, shot a poor percentage. Seeing Steph Curry have a mundane by Steph standards performance, and, you know, the Grizzlies still struggle to not pull it out at home. I think the Warriors right now are in a really good position because they're going to get a big Steph game. They got the big Jordan Poole game, which might just be a normal Jordan Poole game at this point. I think the Warriors are in a really good position to take this when Draymond is actually playing full games.
Yeah. Slater, when you have a team like the Warriors that has three chips under its belt, has all this history, you would think they didn't need morale boosters. You know what I mean? You would think that, you know, been there and done that, but you have this gap from the 2019 finals to now. You have the whole story of so many injuries and new faces and the evolution of this new identity that they're trying to put together. How big was game one when it comes to, you know, sneaking out of there, not only with the W, but, you know, to do it obviously without Draymond and going forward, you know, what do you feel like that means?
It felt like one of those monumental game ones where it reminded me a little of like Boston in the first round against Brooklyn, right? When Tatum hits the layup, that just felt a lot bigger than just a normal game one win. It was such a swing moment, just like Jaws layup missing. You're like, wow, you know, this changes the tenor of the series. I think it changes the vibe of both teams. And the fact that they just stole home court right away, I think it's huge. You know, Memphis did lose game one to Minnesota, and that's something I know Steve Kerr has been trying to remind them of in recent days. But, yeah, I mean, you did like some of the matchup, the way it kind of tilts towards Memphis, but not, I mean, what you saw in game one, they just have such a difficulty guarding Jordan Poole. He's just changed what the Warriors are, because everything is supposed to be so Steph Curry focused. When Memphis beat the Warriors in the play-in last season, it was because they, like, you know, top block Steph on everything, and, you know, Dylan Brooks is doing kind of all his histrionics around Steph, and everything's so Steph focused. Well, everything has changed because it's like, why is there two Steph Currys? Why is there another Steph Curry over here who's getting to the rim and scoring 31 easy?
Little Spider-Man meme action. Yeah,
Steph Curry, I believe, was -9 in game one. They won that game in the start of the fourth quarter when Steph Curry sitting on the bench. That used to be like spooky time for the Warriors. Like the entire fan base would be like, get him back in the game. You know, like the lead is slipping. And, you know, you would just be watching the clock. When is Kerr able to get Steph back in? Now it's like, well, Jordan Poole's kind of extending the lead right now, so he can rest a little bit longer. So that's just changed everything.
So Jordan was a +10, 31 points. And we're going to spin this forward, obviously, but, you know, 9 boards, 9 assists, rather, and 8 boards. Hell of a night. As a quick shameless plug, when I sat down with Jordan last week to talk about all this stuff, my favorite moment probably in terms of his just kind of letting the guard down a little bit was, I said, you know, what's it like getting compared to Steph? And I asked him in the way I said, I know players don't like comparisons. You are Jordan Poole. So I tried to take some sting off the cliche question that way. But it surprised me a little bit when he smiled and he was just like, yeah, that's pretty dope. Like, it's pretty dope. Said it like 3 times. Like, he was, you know, he's enjoying this moment. Now, next thing you know, he's carrying them damn near in the second round off to a good start. And to your point, it is, if you're the Grizzlies, it's such a different landscape than, you know, that play-in game when you thought if we just beat Steph up enough and show these guys who we are, you know, then we can pull this thing out.
I wonder how the Grizzlies go about defending these guys in game two, because I thought the rotations were a little bit off in game one. There were so many moments. Credit the Warriors, because when the Grizzlies were late on a rotation, it felt like, especially in that third quarter stretch where the Warriors were really just moving the ball so well, it was like if the Grizzlies were late on a rotation, the Warriors would find the open guy like every time. They'd swing to the corner. If the Grizzlies rotated in time to the corner to bother somebody to make it just a good shot, not a great shot, they'd swing it back out to the wing. The Warriors were just getting these great looking jumpers every single time. And I think the Grizzlies can shore that kind of stuff up. But I'm really curious to see how they try to guard when these guys are on. And I'm really curious to see the lineup constructions now that Steve Kerr throws out there, because like Gary Payton II is a guy who I thought would be very important for this series. And I think Steve Kerr had to agree because he started him in game one and he played him for a lot of closing time in that game as well. And I think he's important as a jaw defender. And you know, we saw what happened, like crunch time, Jordan Poole gets on Ja and Ja goes straight to the rim. And that's the number one thing that they wanted to take away from Ja, was like him getting to the rim. They were so extreme going under screens, sagging off of him, all that stuff. They want to make him a jump shooter. And I'm really interested to see how the Grizzlies end up defending when the Warriors have all of those offensive guys out there. And I'm really interested to see how Steve Kerr configures these lineups so that they can continue to kind of get Ja. Look, he put up a hell of a line in game one, but he was for the most part taking a lot of the shots Golden State wanted him taking.
And he really took, interested to see how the Warriors 31 shot attempts, which is extremely high. 11 3-point attempts, I think, is one off a career high. Desmond Bane only got up 5 threes, only made one. He's currently on the injury report with lower back soreness. He was getting treatment during the game. Like, to me, that was like from the Memphis side, like they got to get Desmond Bane going. How good was he in the Minnesota series?
Slater, I was going to ask you about the Desmond factor. I didn't hone in on him. Like, how much of that was an off night? How much of that was the Warriors?
I would say both. Like, he you know, where we were sitting, he kept during timeouts was just there, like really stretching. He was always stretching during the just breaks, and you could tell like something was bothering him. So I don't think he was fully himself. But also, you know, you were talking to Warriors people before the series or even during the off day yesterday, and it was like, don't get detached from Desmond Bane. Like, stay attached to him. It was like very high on their scouting report to-do list. And as Fred said, I mean, they're treating Ja Morant like he's Russell Westbrook. It's kind of, you know, how I've put it, but they are begging him to shoot threes, almost, you know, like pride threes. Like, look, we really don't think you can make that shot, so you better take it, you know, to prove to us that you can make it. And he made four. The first two plays of the game, he makes threes. The first 6 points of the series. They don't care, though. They're staying off of him. And if he's taking 11 threes and Desmond Bane is taking five, the Warriors are taking that, like, every game of the series.
Yeah, I mean, he's 34 and a half.
That sort of defensive strategy conventionally is considered kind of what you were saying, Slater, where it's, we don't believe in your jump shot, so take the jump shot. But there's another side of it too, which is that a lot of Ja's facilitating comes when he comes around to pick and roll, or he comes off of an ISO and he gets to the lane and he finds someone for a lob, or he finds Brandon Clark cutting, or he finds Desmond Bane in the corner. Part of the reason Desmond Bane killed against Minnesota was because Ja was just getting middle, or when Ja was able to get middle, he could kick out and find Desmond Bane for corner threes or for wing threes. And Minnesota, I thought, actually did a really good job against Ja playing a different kind of strategy. They were just like swarming him. They were blitzing him often. And that was a different sort of strategy. They have different defensive personnel. But when Ja was able to get to the middle, that was how Bane got a lot of his shots. And when you sag off him like that, when you bait him into those jumpers, you're also encouraging him not to be Ja the facilitator, which is quite possibly his greatest offensive trait.
Yeah, I mean, look, Ja Morant, 31-10-9, loss. Warriors are taking that every time. It's kind of what they did with Jokic. It's a very different version of it, but with Jokic, it was one-on-one, try to make him a scorer, not a passer. Similar with Ja, try to make him a jump shooter, not just like a downhill assassin. And This is when we mentioned like the Warriors, you know, championship DNA or whatever. Like, to me, this is where the experience helps. They've done this against Russell Westbrook. It's why they were successful, in that Thunder series in a lot of ways, because they know they use weaknesses of superstars at times against them. And you can flip to the defensive end. They know Ja is similar to Westbrook defensively. He loses focus at times off ball. He's obviously smaller for a guard. Sometimes they want to try to hide him on Andrew Wiggins. Well, they're telling Wiggins, go crash the glass. Okay, they're having him on Gary Payton. Gary Payton, just every time he turns his head, slash, you're going to find yourself open. Maybe the biggest bucket of the game, you know, he cuts behind Ja and Brandon Clark, as Taylor Jenkins really wanted to let me know. It wasn't just Ja's fault, but, you know, he cut behind John, gets a layup, like an easy layup with under 2 minutes left in a 2-point game. So
what are we referencing there, Slater, with your Taylor Jenkins passive aggressiveness?
he was non-passive aggressive. I just asked him about, I was like, you know, Ja got back cut for a big layup and, you know, gave up an offensive rebound to Andrew Wiggins. Like, what more do you need from him in those situations? And he said, first of all, that was not Ja Morant's assignment, so that's completely incorrect. It was fine. To me, what it read as
don't
is like,
poke the grizzly.
Yeah, it read as like, you know, don't come to Tennessee and like go after the superstar.
Yep.
Is fine. I mean, it's very informative to me.
It is.
And
for
you
sure.
know, you look at the play and sure, like Brandon Clark and Ja Morant are both kind of like should be aware that this guy's cutting for a huge layup, and neither are. But it was. And then on the offensive rebounds, he was like, and we gave up 26 second chance points. That's a team thing, not a Ja Morant thing, which it's fair also. It's interesting. They do seem a little bit defensive of Ja Morant's defense, in that organization.
Right. All right. Speaking of superstars who are facing defenses that are loading up on them and exposing some of their few weaknesses, Luka Doncic out here in Phoenix. Let's dive into that series a little bit, guys. I'm obviously here. Admittedly dragging a little bit. Yesterday was a long day, but fun game, fun-ish game. The Suns looked fantastic. They're up 22-6 early, and Luka is struggling a bit with Mikal Bridges right out the gate. If it wasn't Mikal, they're switching with Chris Paul, and Chris was doing fine. It's crazy. Of all the games I've covered, certainly in the high thousands, if you will, don't remember many when a guy drops 45, 12, and 8, and you feel like he wasn't great and he could have been better. And it's a little bit like the Ja Morant thing, Slater, in terms of Monty Williams and the Suns, clearly deciding that, Luka's superpower is not just his scoring ability. And yes, he winds up with 8 dimes, but that was half of their team total. And by the time the Mavs ever got anything going, they were in a massive hole in terms of, that early lead. So I thought Phoenix looked great. They let go of the rope a little bit late, and I don't kind of give too much credence to that meaning anything. It never actually felt like the Mavs were going to win this game. It did feel like Phoenix, and I kind of wrote this, that they were back on track as a team with, massive title aspirations here, and a team that was 8 games better than those Grizzlies, the second best team in the NBA during the regular season. What did you guys see in that one?
I mean, look, what have we heard all the time from people around Dallas for a long time now? They want a second legitimate off the dribble threat next to Luka. And we saw Jalen Brunson take that on against Utah. He struggled in game 1 against Phoenix. You're watching that game and you're like, man, this is just... Utah really has a problem.
Man. Yeah.
Like I know Phoenix has a really good defense and Mikal Bridges is freaking great and Crowder is really good and they defend hard and have great team defense and individual defenders and everything. But it's like, man, this does not bode well for Utah. There were moments where Luka got trapped and Jalen Brunson could have attacked or someone else could have attacked and it just didn't really work. But quite honestly, I think the bigger issue was that the Suns just absolutely sliced them. Like defensively, offensively, it was just a masterclass from Phoenix and from DeAndre Ayton, and they were just getting whatever shots they wanted. I think the Suns scored 130 points per 100 possessions in that game. It's like crazy offensive performance against the Dallas defense that has been quite good in the second half of the season. I just think Phoenix is so good on both sides of the ball that like if you're going to let them score like that and take those kinds of shots, like you're kind of finished.
I mean, DeAndre Ayton was great. You know, he has 25. That's not your typical Ayton evening. Obviously, a result of the Mavs playing smaller. But you're right. I mean, Monty Williams afterwards, Fred, I forget which stat he highlighted on the box, but he acted like 121 wasn't, you know, that was the tip of the iceberg that he felt like they could have been scoring 130 plus. And they got a whole thing. Devin Booker defensively, did a great job on Brunson. And you're dead on about the Jazz. I'm watching this thing as they figure out their offseason and what decisions they want to make. It was a hell of an indictment when it comes to Dallas and how they looked against Utah.
Can I shout out Mikal Bridges?
Do it.
42 minutes in game one. He's now, these are his minute totals in the first seven games of the playoffs. 38, 40, 40, 41, 47, 44. It was 47, 44 in the last two games of that closeout of the Pelicans. 82 games played this season, 82 games played every season of his career to this point. And that type of minute total, you know, I cover a team where, you know, they're older, but they literally, nobody on their team has once played 40 minutes in any of the playoff games so far. He's just a rarity from just an availability and just usage standpoint. And obviously, you know, Sam, you can speak to this, I haven't been there yesterday, but like what an impact he has. And it's just crazy.
Longest consecutive games played streak in the NBA.
No, he's great. He's fun to watch. I think people are finally starting to appreciate him more. You know, Booker had a not so subtle comment post game about this is why he should have been Defensive Player of the Year. You know, which certainly some people feel. He had that spectacular block against Reggie Bullock in the corner that, you know, it was Herb Jones-ish, where he was just flying and then somehow getting to the ball. He's, you know, Chris Paul is the head of the snake on the offensive end, but Mikal is that guy on the defensive end. And he's spectacular, you know, and they locked him up last season on that extension, have him at a good number. And this is where Phoenix and everything they, you know, have built is so sustainable. You have, okay, Chris Paul is not a young man, so we'll see how long he can do this thing. But they're a hell of a team, man. I don't know where else to take that, but, you know, I do not think this is going to be a long series. I feel like they're going to take care of Dallas pretty quick.
I have a question.
Yep.
Since the premise of this podcast is, I mean, we are tampering. It's the,
ooh, what's the tampering premise angle? Is,
yeah, well, not the tampering angle, but from a front office maneuvering angle. So Mikal Bridges extends before this season 4 for $90. I totally get why he did it. If I'm a player and you get $90 million thrown in front of you, and that is just life-changing generational money. If Mikal Bridges had turned it down, if he had gone the other Bridges route, the Miles Bridges route, and just turned down the extension, and he were going to be a restricted free agent after this year with the season that he'd had, and everything else went exactly the same. I mean, I think we can all agree he'd be getting more than 4 for $90 on the free agent market. His max is like almost twice that in guaranteed money. It's like 5 for $180. What do we think he would get if he were a free agent after this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be max-ish. He would be in that territory. It really would. His offensive game has come and gone a bit. You know what I mean? Like it's had spikes. So I guess if you were looking at something to take a little bit off the top, maybe that would be it. You know, and he's not generally seen as a guy on the offensive end who's gonna carry you or be an alpha male. But he's talented and he shoots the hell out of it. So. You know, it's way beyond 3 and D. It's a lot of other stuff in there too. And the D is, we're going to edit that part out. I can't believe I just was dropping D reference.
No, we're not editing it.
We're not editing that. Are you kidding me? I got killed a few times.
It's all about the D's.
The defense is fantastic.
To take the, you know, your question a step further, Fred, what type of situation would the Suns be in if they're sitting there? They haven't been able to, you know, decide on eight. And imagine if they were deciding on eight and Bridges. I mean, then we really would think about
the eight thing. I want to try to revisit that one of these days, maybe when I'm out here. But like, man, he needs to be running by Robert Sarver courtside and just screaming, give him my max, because that should be coming his way.
Yeah. What just any other just observations from the ground in Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it offline a little bit. The crowd, it's interesting. As you know, Slater, I'm going to get myself in trouble with Suns fans, but like this was not my favorite crowd last year. They were just like too amped up.
taunted by skateboarders during the finals. There was a bunch of Bart Simpson Suns fans like beating him up, basically.
You're like trying to get an Uber one night and these like shirtless, you know, teenage dudes roll by on their skateboards and literally like damn me right in my face. We're like, Suns at F and four. Like, bro, like chill out. Okay, so I said offline, like it really did feel last year like they hadn't been in the playoffs in I think it was 11 years. They were just too thirsty and they were too amped up. And then when you had that brawl in the second round between the Suns fan and the Nuggets fan, it just kind of like sparked something I thought kind of ugly. And like, you know, and so then Suns and F and four became, you know, a rallying cry and everything was just a little too much. This year, I kind of wrote this, they feel like a fan base and a team that, you know, it's act like you've been here before. Monty Williams has been preaching a bit of a one game at a time approach. I wrote a little anecdote about how JaVale McGee, you know, former Warriors later and three-time champion, told, you know, they beat New Orleans in the first round after the first game. And he kind of did that classic thing where he tells the guys in the locker room, like 15 more, you know, 15 more, we got to go. And Monty kind of told him like, hey, let's not go the 15 more route. It's just, it's one game at a time. Like he didn't want like the mental, you know, kind of approach of looking at the whole thing. It was literally day by day. And the Suns fans are kind of seem to be in that mood. Like they were jacked. They were fun. They were supportive. But you know, they know that this team is supposed to go until the end and we'll see if they can do that, but good vibe. I mean, it's a great home crowd. It's, you know, it's a great city. I enjoy being out here. It's not, as hot as it was last time we were around. So that part is nice. So no complaints.
It will be a month from now.
Right.
You know, probably. And by the way, it's way, way too early to look ahead, but Warriors Suns profiles as a spicy, fun potential West Finals.
Look at you, Grizzlies Nation. Pay attention to Slater. What he's doing here? He's just, he's,
my God, he's just, he's shitting on your airport,
right?
Hey, I was shouting out the media seats, the vibe in the arena.
The media seats got me wanting to go to Memphis.
He's pissing off Taylor Jenkins.
You guys know that the unspoken part. Well, it's not unspoken, I guess, because I'll speak on it. But like reporters, people, we don't root for teams. We're done with that. Like we try to tell stories and cover this stuff. Do we root for selfish like logistics? Yes, absolutely. So I tell people all the time, like with the Warriors, I feel guilty because like my life is a little bit better in the playoffs if the Warriors go deep because I live somewhat close to there. I can sleep in my own bed. So I've been kind of going, all right, let's go Golden State, you know, but now Memphis with, you know, with courtside seating and that kind of stuff. And I could go in and be the good cop to Slater's bad cop since he's in there pissing everybody off. I think that could be fun.
It's also why Sam is locked into this Kings coaching search. He needs them to turn around and make the playoffs for the first time.
I know. One of these days.
Nearly
2006.
Would you like
baby.
To give an update on the Kings coaching search?
I'll do that briefly on the other side of this ad break. We will be right back to talk briefly Kings coaching search. That's a good idea. Philly, Miami, Boston, Milwaukee. We will go to the east side. Be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, gentlemen, Slater, since you asked for it, yes, Kings coaching search, you know, one of three vacancies right now, Lakers and Charlotte as well. You know, tis the season for stuff like that in addition to the playoffs. Kings interviewing the finalists this week, final round of interviews in person. We got Mike Brown. We got Steve Clifford. We got Mark Jackson. The first round was over Zoom. With seven candidates, they cut it down to three. Now Vivek Rana Dive, Kings owner, will be part of the process. That is certainly normal, natural, and we'll see what they do. You know, there's, like always, there's rumblings about kind of what direction they might go. You know, I think inevitably, you know, Mark Jackson's history with Vivek and the Warriors and the fact that he was the Warriors coach when Vivek was the minority owner there. And you know, not just that, but other rumblings have led people to feel like, you know, that Mark is the guy that Vivek is keyed in on, if you will. And that, you know, the front office might be looking more at Mike Brown. So we'll see. I feel like Steve might be in the background there, but you know how these things go too. I mean, the handicapping of it, once the decision finally gets made, sometimes we miss the mark. So I hesitate to speculate too much, but an interesting search. You know, it's a defensive minded coaches for a franchise that, like, looked at it yesterday. They haven't been, what was it like better than,
yeah, I read your story. I think, I mean, it was bottom 10 for since Rick Adelman was around.
Yeah, like 19th, I think, was the best in since 2006. They were 11th in defensive rating the year they made the playoffs in 2006. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like always, Kings trying to find somebody to turn their thing around, and we'll see what they do there.
While also walking into a core that is built around Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox, which has the chances to be a great pick and roll tandem, but that's going to be difficult to build a non, you know, bottom 10 defense with those two.
Yeah. I mean, as plenty of people have said, like, you know, your best defender is a 6 foot guard and Davion Mitchell. So, you know, that's not a great starting point foundationally, if that's a word.
A 6 foot guard who is probably going to have to play off the ball and next year starting point guard, and it's
and also just completed his rookie season. You know, we're not talking about, you know, mid prime.
Yeah, he's 24 though. Right.
We're not
24.
Talking about Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
We're not talking about prime.
He's Marcus older Smart. Though. That part I don't give too much to.
No doubt. I'm just saying, like, the guy's played one season of basketball in a Kings team.
Oh yeah.
Disappointed.
Yep. So that's the deal there. We will see what they do. All right. Let's talk you guys want to go Philly, Miami, or Boston? Milwaukee.
I'm fascinated by Philly.
All right. Fred wants to
Fred
talk
might
Philly.
Be the only person to say that. He's fascinated
Fred, take
by
the mic.
What I believe is the worst of the four series, but go ahead.
Do you fear the beer, Fred?
I'm just fascinated by what, well, I think Brian Wilson might be a little more feared than James Harden right
If you
now.
Don't know, look it up, people. Brian Wilson, Giants reliever.
Brian Wilson was good. That Great was a, beard. That was the 2010 Giants he was the closer for?
One of Great the beard. Even year titles.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, I just, how concerned should the Sixers be with the fact that James Harden just can't get by anyone? Like, Miami switches everybody onto Harden. I mean, look, it's one thing for him to just, like, want to step back against Bam. But, like, I don't know. The reason that James Harden was as great as he was because he didn't need a pick. You know, he could just go one-on-one against you and create space. And James
Slater,
Harden
are you
is
noticing
not,
that past tense there? I just got to not let that slide. Was
It's very intentional.
Yes, yes.
It's very intentional.
It's over. It's a wrap, he says.
Well, I don't know if it's the hamstring that's been bugging him all season, which if it is, then maybe he just takes the offseason and he's back. That's always a total possibility. But the thing that made James Harden, before we saw what James Harden is doing right now, an all-time offensive player, and what made Daryl Morey say he was the greatest scorer who ever touched the basketball, was the fact that he didn't need a screen. He didn't need to run a pick and roll. It was why they felt so comfortable trading Clint Capella in Houston and just going with four out around Russell Westbrook, I guess, but having James Harden there and just letting him square up guys. It was because Harden didn't need a screener. He could just go one-on-one against everybody and get by guys, create space on his own. And he's not this unbelievably explosive guard, but he's got a quick first step. And he's got this unbelievable kind of unmatched footwork when he has the basketball. And like, this has been a problem basically all season, going back to Brooklyn, where he just hasn't been able to get by guys. And Miami, meanwhile, is switching everyone onto Harden in game one. He's going up against Tyler Hero, and he's not driving by Tyler Hero. He drove by Max Strus in one-on-one one time, and he threw a lob to DeAndre Jordan. And I believe that was the only time that he like went up against somebody and cleanly drove by him in game one. And I'm just... if this is not a hamstring thing with Harden, I am just, I mean, he's a free agent after this year. Philly is either going to max him out or come really, really close to maxing him out. And I just wonder what this means for their future, because I don't know what should we expect from him moving forward?
Well, and to add the other layer to it, the obvious but relevant layer is like, it's the psychology of Daryl Morey and you know, the history between the two of them and the backstory of Daryl obviously bringing James from Houston to Philly, and that kind of, you know, that it's funny because the guy who is certainly a kind of a forefather of analytics, I think, is going to have to battle his own just kind of very human tendencies, which is like, you are so invested in this individual that you're going to have to look yourself in the mirror and make the right decision for the franchise, as opposed to just, you know, continuing to gamble, even if it doesn't look wise.
By the way, Draymond Green has picked the Mavericks to win the series. He said Suns will win game one and the Mavs will win the series. It's curious to do that, you know, just be picking, you know, the series that you're going up against next.
I just did that right now.
I just saw them from his podcast Twitter account tweet out.
Don't Draymond tease Green, me Suns here, Slater. You want to talk Draymond? We will talk Draymond. You haven't really talked Draymond. You know?
I mean, can we dub Draymond as the best emoji user on NBA Twitter at this point? When every time somebody gets hit in the nuts, it's like somebody blows the conch and Draymond is able to hear it and knows he's supposed to tweet a laughing emoji.
Right. Are you indicating, Fred, that he's better at Twitter than another famous Michigan State alum basketball player with Magic Johnson and his Captain Obvious Twitter account that is amazing in its own right?
It's so great. Fantastic. It's so great watching Winning Time and seeing how compelling.
Time. Okay.
Well, just seeing how compelling and captivating Magic Johnson was as a person, and then going to his Twitter and seeing him say things like, two big market teams that need to get better are the Lakers and the Knicks. And just seeing the juxtaposition between those two personalities. It's like, is Winning Time completely lying to me about Magic? If they did realistic Winning Time, would Magic have just been up there saying the Lakers are winning a lot of games?
There's a Wizard of Oz character behind his Twitter account that it's not him. It's just some, you know, 70-year-old retired school teacher woman that, you know, tweets about the NBA.
Back to the Philly series.
Sorry. Thank you, Slater.
Yeah. How about DeAndre Jordan minus 22 in 17 minutes? I mean, I just don't know if they can play him. But obviously the Embiid being out. This would be James Harden's time to basically earn that max contract, right? Go get one in Miami without Joel Embiid. Like, to me, that is the task. He still has one more chance at the task, but yeah.
So, well, can I give a quick stat there, Slater, to augment your argument? James Harden has not scored 25 plus points. You know, we just got into May. He did not do that in April at all. And I'm looking at his game log here. I mean, he's gone 30 plus once since, let me keep scrolling, since late January. This is to Fred's point. You know, I don't care, Embiid, no Embiid, different team, different landscape. It is James Harden. This is the guy who got the MVP by being that guy. And I mean, that alone is staggering to me just on the scoring side.
That's a guy who averaged 40 in a month.
Right.
Like, that's incredible. By the way, can we give some props to Bam Adebayo? This is going to be his.
Oh, he's having series. Fun without the big fellow in the middle.
Oh, like no Embiid. They're playing Tobias Harris at the five some. And he's just, I mean, Tobias is playing hard, but it's just Bam is too big and he's too good. He's roasting DeAndre, like you said. I think Paul Reed is too small for him. It's just Bam at 26, 12, and 4 in game one. And I just, as long as Embiid is not there, it's like, I just feel like Bam is going to do whatever he wants. He's switching on to guys on the perimeter. Harden doesn't even attempt to drive by him, which is like, I think we overuse the term that a guy can guard all five positions. Usually the guy maybe can guard 2, 3, 4, and you can kind of switch him onto ones and get away with it, and kind of switch him onto fives and get away with it, but it's not preferred. But like, Bam guards all five positions. It's
well, and this is why I don't blame him. This is why he was mad he didn't get Defensive Player of the Year. You know, I didn't think he deserved it just based on games played. That does matter a lot to me. But that general point that he's doing, I mean, especially in the context of the you know, omnipresent Rudy Gobert discussion, you know, and the limitations that Rudy does have when it comes to the perimeter. Bam is like, yeah, I got this. I got all this. And he's incredibly unique in that way.
Yeah, what he did to Trae Young's offense in the first round is a little bit like what he did yesterday. But just, you know, if he can switch on to you, it's very difficult for Trae Young to play the high screen game. And once Trae Young couldn't play the high screen game, like, Atlanta was frozen, essentially. And I feel like that is, he basically did that, you know, obviously to Harden and Maxey. Maxey had a very bad game one. What about the stunner of the game ones overall in the second round? I thought Milwaukee beat Boston and Boston.
Sorry, real quick, Slater. I know you got to run. I just want to more answer your question more on the nose. James is, to me, is going to be back. Daryl will. I don't know if he's going to give him everything, but I think, you know, they're gonna tell us that the hamstring was a bigger deal, and I don't see this ending any other way than them trying this Harden and Embiid duo. You know, in a year, I mean, now Joel is hurt, that this is why they did it. They gave up too much. And you could argue like, yeah, okay, well, don't keep going down that path if you don't think it's going to work. But I would be stunned if this is not, you know, their attempt at a little super team in Philly after this summer.
I wonder if this makes them any more prone to just doing whatever they can to try to bring in one more max guy.
Yeah.
Because Harden is up, he could take a little bit less. They have some draft picks left. They could attach him to Tobias Harris, drop him into somebody's
space. What do you mean another max guy? Tobias Harris is a max guy.
No, I think you're right.
Well,
Fred.
They could.
I mean,
they could drop Tobias. And
like Fred.
It's doable if they are desperate enough to get it done. It's doable.
When the Sixers got him, James, their intel was that he would potentially be willing to take less. And obviously, you know, nobody knows him better than Daryl. So, you know, that wouldn't shock me at all as, you know, a possible solution out of this. All right, guys, one more ad break, and then we're going to talk some Boston, Milwaukee, the greatness that is Giannis Antetokounmpo. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, gentlemen, last one here on the second round playoff pod debut. Giannis was great in game one. The Celtics realized that it's a little tougher to defend a team that actually moves the ball and a team that doesn't play iso ball like the Celtics so often do and have for so many years. So I don't know what side of that game and this series you want to start on, but the Bucks without Chris Middleton, you know, showing out the way they did, I thought was incredibly impressive. Drew Holiday, I like, man, I should give credit, but I forget who this was. Somebody else on our podcast network made a great point. I'll just give it to Jay King because he's Mr. Boston. That Marcus Smart looks at Drew Holiday and is just like, oh, damn, like you defend like me and then you're better on the offensive end. So that's a tough matchup. So, you know, Milwaukee actually, you know, kind of flexing like the champs was impressive.
What did the Celtics shoot like on twos? It was something like, you know, historically bad, or like 1 of 15 or something on like paint twos or something like that.
Just think I got stats just for days. You don't need right to get me slated.
Generally, jeez, the point is like they were really locked up. And now, is that just like an abnormal bad shooting night and it's going to
reverse? They were 33.3% overall, 28 out of 84.
Yeah.
On twos, go ahead. I'll do the math.
Yeah. I mean, it's just. Like maybe that's just like, you know, they'll hit their mid-rangers, especially like Tatum and Brown, and that'll reverse course. I know I've talked to people who still remain very confident in Boston in the series, but also like, you know, Milwaukee, even without Chris Middleton, like that is a great defense. I mean, Drew Holiday and Giannis, you could make a case for both as like top five defenders in the league. They got two of them on the same team. Brooke Lopez has held up health-wise to this point. So, yeah, I mean, we talked going in how tough a matchup this was for Giannis because of all what Boston could throw at him from a defensive perspective. Well, it's a little bit flip side of that did. Too, right?
And they did, though. Well, and just to hit that side of it real quick, I mean, that's what I loved about Giannis's game. I mean, he's 9 of 25 from the field, and they did throw that stuff at him. Al Horford was kind of leading the way, but he's seeing, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 different defenders. But he kind of, you know, he went back to the old Jason Kidd Bucks days when Jason, to his credit, put the ball in Giannis's hands as a point guard, and he just started finding guys. And because Middleton's out, you had one less, you know, ball dominant guy, and Giannis had to pick up more of the slack there. And I thought, as a playmaker, he was fantastic.
You know, I thought it would be interesting. I thought Middleton was going to be so important in this series. Part of the reason I thought Boston was going to win coming into it was not just because Middleton is such a good player, but also because like they needed his one-on-one offense against Boston's defenders just to be able to get off high percentage shots. Because when Chris Middleton takes them, they're high percentage shots, and it's kind of amazing that Milwaukee came in and just completely affected Boston on the other end the way that they did. Like you mentioned, Brook Lopez's health holding up, he was a huge reason for why Boston not just didn't shoot well inside the three-point arc, but like their shot selection was so affected by Brook Lopez. Just they didn't want to come near him. He was totally deferring, just kind of deterring them from going into the paint. And so I think Brook Lopez gets, Giannis might be the best help defender in the league and Drew Holiday gets his due, but Brook Lopez as a rim protector, he had a really strong game one, and he's, that back injury was worrisome. You have a guy in his 30s, 7-footer, having a back injury and missing months because of it. That's just, you're never like, okay, it's fine. He's coming back. He'll be great. And he just looks like Brook Lopez.
Milwaukee's defensive rating in the playoffs is 93.5. That's number one, obviously. Number two is Miami at 103.0. So, I mean, they're 10 rating points, wow, efficiency-wise better. Jeez. Their wins in these playoffs, or, you know, this is what they've given up point totals in their wins to the other team. 89 to Boston in game one, 86 to Chicago, 81 to Chicago, 95 and 100 in the four wins. I mean, like, they basically are just, in this age, are just holding teams under 100 points in the playoffs.
Some Sacramento Kings level defense right there.
Man, shots.
All right, I'm going to let y'all go with that, especially because Bucks Celtics has the far and away the shortest shelf life on this pod. Their game is hours away. I will do quickly on the way out here. You guys up for a little prediction game to see where we think things are going, and we can chuckle at ourselves when we get it wrong later?
Yes.
All right. Bucks, Celtics, Slater, go.
Celtics still maybe 6-7-ish. To me, it's probably going the distance.
Fred.
Yeah, I picked Celtics in 7, and I guess I'll keep with that.
Bucks and 6. Look, I'm going to be bold. I think Bucks win.
I
want
to hear your bold Suns and 4 take, but I want it like your Bart Simpson.
All right, Dubs, Grizzlies, Slater, start with you.
Warriors, that game one was massive, so I think it's going 5-6 range.
Okay. Freddie?
Yeah, Warriors in six.
Yeah, I like that one. Warriors in six. Memphis is good, man. They'll get some. I mean, they got to get game two. I mean,
this is a massive game tonight for the Memphis Grizzlies. At home, game two after that gut punch loss. Like, do they respond? They blew out the Timberwolves in game two.
Yeah.
Like, this is the series tonight. Warriors get this one. I mean, it'll be quick. So, this will decide what type of series we're gonna see, I think.
No doubt. All right, Sixers Heat, Slater.
Heat in five, I'll say. I think we'll probably see Embiid between three and four, and I think they'll get one in Philly, but it seems like it's going to be short to me.
Okay. Fred?
Yeah, this feels like a gentleman's sweep. This feels like it's like 3-0, Embiid comes back for game four, they win game four by eight, and then they go back to Miami, and Miami just kind of takes care of business at home.
That's fair. Yeah. No, I'll go Heat in five in that one. I'll give the Embiid factor one. And last but not least, Mavericks, Suns in F. I don't feel like dropping an F-bomb today. The kids are listening.
Suns in three.
I think it's going six say, or seven. I do.
Where's the offense coming from then?
Luca. No, I mean, they can ignite Brunson a little bit, I guess.
I told Cato last night, our Mavericks beat writer, we had fun chopping it up on his 77 minutes pod. Check that out. I said I was blaming Cato because he wrote this season preview or series preview, and his whole tone, which was on point, was that the Mavericks are happy to be here. They just finally got out of the first round. You know, this wasn't some sort of buildup. Like when they made those moves at the trade deadline, they were trying to clear the decks with the Porzingis contract to Washington, figure out what kind of pieces to put around Luka. It's not as if they built their team and now they're just trying to see how far they can take it. This is gravy for them. And I just think in terms of their spirit and the competitive side, it kind of looked that way last night. And Phoenix is obviously on a mission.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Phoenix looks really good. I just think that it's really hard to pick against the Suns right now.
Right.
So, well, the only question I had on
Suns in five, series, I thought the Booker, prediction.
I thought Booker physically didn't look very good in game six, understandably, right? You know, it was like, he's coming back this soon from the hamstring. How did you think he just physically looked in person last night?
I thought he looked good. You know, he looked like himself. Offensively, he actually popped more than I thought. Like, I looked at the box and I thought he had gotten off a little bit more. He wasn't all that efficient, but defensively, like I hit on earlier, you know, a lot of time on Brunson and just doing his thing. So he, you know, he looks good, and Luka too, coming from his own injury. Although Luka, man, it never gets old seeing him in person. And like, I thought about it last night. He's like a, you know, what's the opposite of a poor man's, you know, it's, I guess, a rich man's Kyle Anderson. Like, his slow-mo style cracks me up with just the way he navigates the floor. But yeah, Booker looked good, and it does seem like he's back to being himself.
Gotcha. Well, I got to get to shoot around.
All right, gents. Did we get all the predictions in? I think Fred did.
Yeah, right? We did.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Thank you all. We'll talk to you next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.